Can American sovereignty, as designed by the founders in the Constitution, in any way be undermined by emergency measures to fight alleged man-made catastrophic global warming? I say alleged because that's really where so much of the battle over climate change is. Is the premise even correct? Even critics of Donald J. Trump will agree that Trump has been making some progress on the economy, but a lot of the other critics, or the same critics even, would say, hey, you're doing so by not fighting against climate change. But again, do we even need to fight against climate change? To clarify all these things, we're going to talk with Gregory Wrightstone. He is the author of a classic book called Inconvenient Facts, The Science Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Greg, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, good to be back home with you, Jerry. There's quite a bit to go over here. Just about all of it's good. You know, we went 4 years under the Biden administration. Virtually nothing coming out of D.C. was positive for America. And here in 6 months, how things have changed.
But I want you to start with the premise. Is climate change, that is climate change alarmism, starting with the right premise? In other words, man-made catastrophic global warming is an existential threat to humanity.
Yeah, well, this will be so much fun. It's so easy. So let's start with, they're demonizing, it's all revolves, doesn't it, around carbon dioxide. They allege that carbon dioxide emissions from burning fossil fuels are increasing carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And that's true that it is. There's been a 50% increase of CO2 in the atmosphere since the Industrial Revolution. But they're saying it's bad. And what we're looking at is, by almost every metric, that increase of carbon dioxide. And bear in mind, the average atmospheric carbon dioxide levels are only at 430 parts per million. And when I say only, that's because it's average CO2 levels throughout Earth's history have been 6.5 times that. And so historically, we're at near historic lows for CO2. We don't have too much CO2. We don't have enough, actually. And the other thing, the other part of this is our warming temperatures, and we are in a warming trend. Bear in mind, it's warmed about 1.2 degrees Celsius since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. History tells us warming temperatures have always historically been hugely beneficial for humanity. Each of the warmer periods throughout Earth's human history, going back to the first great civilizations, coincided with great empires and civilizations and bountiful food. And just opposite of what we're being told are the cold periods were horrific. So the additional CO2 in the atmosphere is driving a worldwide what we call greening of the planet. In other words, increases of vegetation and crops, most significantly, agricultural productivity is exploding and greatly outpacing population growth. That's a great thing. We're seeing increases in vegetations from the near polar regions to the equator. By almost every metric we look at, our ecosystems are thriving and prospering, and humanity is benefiting from this combination of modest warming and more CO2. It's something that should be celebrated, not demonized. And so, yeah, they get it. They're wrong on so many different levels. And it was just last Thursday, it was Lee Zeldin, the EPA administrator, announced they were going to be rescinding what's called the endangerment finding. And that dates back to 2009, 16-year-old now regulation. And in this regulation, they found that CO2 was a pollutant. And by that, it could be regulated. And boy, have they. This endangerment finding and the rescission of it that may be announced today, the finalized version of this, just deals with automobiles and trucks, but it extended through just about everything that your listeners are using, that use electricity, just about everything. If they're in the comfort of their home, just look around you. The ceiling fan above you, your dishwasher, your washer or dryer, everything's being regulated and you're only allowed to buy government-approved devices, no matter that you might want to choose something different. And it's all because of what's called this endangerment finding, where they're trying to regulate greenhouse gases and drive us over to use to renewables, wind and solar. It's this unnatural aversion to CO2. They call it the demon molecule. We call it the miracle molecule.
So really the battle boils down to, is carbon dioxide good for us or bad? That's really the battle?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And that's what we argue strongly, the preponderance of evidence and the science support the fact that carbon dioxide, not only is it not a pollutant, but rather it's hugely beneficial. And that will be argued with this, when this announcement for, rescinding the endangerment finding comes, there'll be a 45-day comment period, which we will be filing an extensive science-based comment that hopefully will be used. This will be challenged in courts, probably to the Fifth Circuit first and then to the Supreme Court. But our comment will be designed for further court cases and actually to be argued before the Supreme Court. And our hope there is that the science can be argued and the science and the truth and the facts will win the day, because we have the science, the facts, and the data on our side. I've been an optimist for many years, and I've been saying it's for several years now. I keep saying we're winning. I can feel it. And now we're getting our day in court, hopefully. We stand for science. We stand for scientific method. We stand for critical thinking. These other regulatory agencies rely on consensus science, groupthink, and we're strong proponents of the scientific method.
When it comes to renewables, it's my understanding that even if that's what was desired, because supposedly we've got to fight this existential threat of man-made catastrophic global warming, you know, which climate change is the other phrase they use for it, mainly because there are times, you know, when it's so cold, who wants a fight against global warming? You want more warming sometimes when it's really cold. I remember Al Gore was actually giving a presentation in New York City one time, and it was canceled because of too much snow, a blizzard. Yeah, that's why they changed
That's called the Al Gore effect. That happened when he went to Oslo a couple of years ago. They had to cancel. It's crazy. It's fear mongering is what it is. They've been very successful at fear mongering. And what we've done, particularly the children, there's a real climate phobia where children can't sleep at night because they're worried about the future. People aren't having children because of climate change. And we're doing something about that, Jerry. My first venture into children's books, is called Chloe the Clownfish Sleeps Well. And it tells the story of the clownfish named Chloe on the Great Barrier Reef, that learns in school that her home and her family are in great danger because of climate change. And we're able to tell the story using this, just a beautifully illustrated book for children, to tell the truth about what's actually happening on the Great Barrier Reef, to tell the truth there, that the Great Barrier Reef actually has, at the end of 2024, had the greatest amount of coral cover in the latest survey they did since they began these surveys, completely opposite of the death of the reef as people are being told. In fact, that reefs and corals like it hot, and the hotter the better.
So the good news is the bad news is wrong. And meanwhile, even if the premise were right in the attempt to try and provide alternatives to, say, fossil fuels or natural gas, even if the premise were right, renewables could never really do that, could they? I mean, as far as like wind, energy from wind sources, all it seems to do is kill birds and maybe even whales.
Yeah. And think about that. When we talk about killing whales and birds, the UN report was issued on endangered species, and they call it the sixth great extinction event that's ongoing right now. No, it's not. Far from that. just the opposite is occurring. But in this, one thing they did get right in the UN report, the greatest threat to endangered species is loss of habitat. Okay, I buy that. You buy it. What's their solution for global warming? Pave over thousands of acres or square miles, put up solar panels, cut down thousands of miles or acres of mature forest to put up wind turbines on the tops of ridges. And then not on top of that, you may not be aware, 15,000 U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service authorized the killing of 15,000 bald eagles per year by wind turbines. It's horrific. It's unacceptable. And it's just contrary to what we should be doing there. And these people, these so-called environmentalists, are nothing of the sort. Again, you're talking about killing whales offshore, the East Coast here, the right whale, endangered right whale is in the brink of extinction. And they don't seem to care.
Can you explain the correlation between wind turbines and the killing of whales? So there's some sort of, I'm not even sure I fully understand it, but.
Well, there's nothing completely straightforward documented. These are offshore wind facilities that are being constructed. It's the construction phase for the most part that's very damaging. They use sonar. They do pile drivings to get the wind towers in the seafloor. And if you can imagine, of course, the whales and the dolphins and others use, their ears are extremely sensitive. They use this for echolocating. And there have been a sixfold increase in whale deaths along the East Coast over the last several years, dating back to when they started this. Now, it's hard to, as a whale washes up on shore, they can't really tell what it died from, if it was just confused from the banging or whatever. So it's, there's people rising up all from Nantucket through Virginia and the Carolinas. They don't want these monstrosities off their shoreline. And I don't either. Plus they're unnecessary. They're uneconomic for sure. Big bold bill or whatever Trump called it, the BBB, B3, I guess they're calling it now. They did away with a lot of the subsidies, and these solar, don't call them farms, solar industrial facilities and wind turbine facilities, industrial scale, need the subsidies. They can't survive on their own without the subsidies. And if they're so economic, they should be able to stand on their own without the subsidies.
All right. How about a comment on fossil fuels?
Well, fossil fuels are just, they've allowed us to increase our population tenfold in just a couple of centuries. We're able to enjoy longer lives. Just about everything you see around you, unless it's made out of wood, is derived somehow from either oil or natural gas. And the side benefit of using fossil fuels is that use of these emits more CO2 in the atmosphere. And again, that CO2 is doing many, many good things, driving plant growth. So no, oil, gas, and for example, coal. We can use coal to generate electricity using clean coal technology. We just haven't done it in the United States. Canada, actually, they're called ultra supercritical coal facilities. There's one in the Turk facility in Alabama, but China's building a lot of them. Most of their new coal facilities are these super ultra supercritical coal facilities. So the only thing that comes out their stacks are carbon or water vapor and carbon dioxide, neither of which are a pollutant.
All right, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. Your website is co2learningcenter.com. Greg Wrightstone. Thank you.
Thank you.